Welcome to the podcast, Ricky Sun.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and how the company got started?
Absolutely, Alan. So I started my career in Silicon Valley. I guess that was over 25 years ago. So I consider myself a serial entrepreneur. So my first startup was actually with my professor, you know, from graduate school. That was even before I formally graduated from Santa Clara University.
You were at Santa Clara. I'm a grad of the MBA school there. So cool. What was your focus in grad school?
Well, computer engineering, networking, mm-hmm. security. Mm-hmm. But my undergraduate was actually more focused on CPU design, you know, which is electronic design automation.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, that background was very beneficial to what exactly we are building today. Because considering, you know, we're building graph database, a lot of people probably didn't get it. You know, I think the most important aspect of building a high performance graph database is really about building a high performance graph computing engine. Because that is the part very unlike traditional databases, you know, like a traditional database talking about storage mm-hmm. engine processing everything, but not for graph database. Because for graph database, we're talking about network analytics. We need to deeply penetrate the data, you know, in a connected fashion. And that basically asking us to redesign the internals of the database, especially from the computing perspective. You know, how can we make things moving so much faster, so much deeper? That's the unique, you know, characteristics, one of the most important characteristics of a graph database. By the way, I just want to let you know, OTIPA is a made-up word, which stands for Ultimate Processing Acceleration. So mm-hmm. that pretty much tells us, you know, what exactly we are trying to build. I think like five or 6 years ago, you know, right before we started OTIPA, we explored pretty much all the graph database solutions or players in the market, like open source ones, you know, TitanDB, nowadays they're calling it Janus Graph, and mm-hmm. also Neo4j. They have the, you know, the community edition. We were able to play with it, and also TigerGraph. I think I was one of the earliest enterprise users of TigerGraph. Mm-hmm. But I guess after playing with all of these solutions, we thought, okay, maybe we could build something much faster because we want something to be exponentially faster. Let me explain this. At the time we were trying to build something, you know, to be able to, for instance, assuming you have a, you know, a data repository, you know, like incorporating all the data from Wikipedia, basically, you know, you got a large knowledge graph. And if you are trying to find, you know, the shortest path or the causality path between any randomly, you know, just picking any two entities, finding or, you know, all of the shortest path between these two entities, you want to do it in real time, you know, like within, for instance, 200 milliseconds. Mm-hmm. Neo4j wouldn't be able to, you know, do that. Not Janus Graph. Right. Not even TigerGraph, because when you have more data and when you are trying to have it, you know, traverse as deep as possible, TigerGraph probably will go, you know, out of memory, or the system will just go crash. So we decided to build something that we must make it running exponentially faster. So that's the beginning of OTIPA. And a couple of guys, you know, I mean, the core team happened to have, you know, like the EDA background. When we understand how we can manipulate the data structure to make things, you know, with lowest latency when we traverse the data and when we penetrate the hotspot supernodes, you know, like the entities who are heavily connected to everything else. So, I mean, there from data structure, system architecture perspective, we do have the know-how, and not many other people know that. So we decided to build something. That's the beginning of Altipa. At the very beginning, trust me, we were only building a high performance computing engine, just the engine, not the persistence layer, because everything was really running inside of the memory. That way things can be running so much faster. But at the end of the day, we still need, data to be persisted. So we need a full engine. So, that's the version two of the system. And later we found out we want to move, all the operations to be online, to be in real-time fashion, which we're calling that HTAP, basically just hybrid, transactional processing and analytical processing. It's all mingled together within one system or within one single cluster, right? So that was basically version three of the system. And when we were building version three, which is like 3 years ago, we were ready to serve enterprise customers because the product was finally, production ready. We can start, talking with commercial like banks. They are very demanding and they have a very stringent IT requirements. At a very just the very beginning of it, the POC, stage of the product is not ready for that kind of thing, So we started serving commercial customers 3 years ago. And now I think we have been serving some of the world's most advanced, demanding, I should say sophisticated customers, especially banks, insurance companies, stock exchanges, and even regulators. That's pretty amazing because regulators, they have all the data, aggregated from everywhere. Like for instance, in England, the Bank of England basically controls, I wouldn't say controls or monitors the data, all the transactions from 360 institutions. So that's a large gigantic network of transactions. And they are very interested in using graph technology to be able to penetrate, analyze those data using traditional technologies like relational database or NoSQL. They wouldn't be able to achieve that kind of goal. So that's the future of a graph database. I think comparing with the other players or our peers, I guess the most significant benefits of our product is we are capable of processing the data so much faster and so much deeper. I mean, those are actually two aspects, like the depth is one aspect and speed is another aspect. There are actually two more, the accuracy. I should say comparing with big data and AI, like a lot of I guess financial services professionals, they're calling big data and AI GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. Yeah, that's the funny thing, 'cause I guess one of the reasons that a lot of AI today are really having the problem, they are based on many, statistical operations. So it's not that accurate. So if the business department is demanding for, really higher, accuracy, and it's going to be very difficult for AI or the big data frameworks to be able to achieve that. Graph computing is quite different. Graph computing is not based on, statistical kind of thing, right? It's really based on accurate data traversal, which is the graph, queries or graph algorithm. So we have been, serving use cases that are comparing with the traditional machine learning frameworks. I mean, machine learning, deep learning frameworks, the accuracy are so much better, and which can be quite, interesting for the customers to really shift their IT background. I mean, not IT background, shifting their IT infrastructure from machine learning, big data focused infrastructure to graph-centric architecture. From that perspective, I could even tell, that's graph is going to be the future of IT. I mean, global enterprise are going through a digital transformation. That's the large background. I'm pretty sure that's a $1 trillion market opportunities globally. So all the enterprise are under, the huge, pressure to go digitally transforming their business. But how they do it, some believe, they probably should explore large language model or AI-centric approach. But from our perspective, we truly believe graph is also a form of AI. It's just it with great explainability, great accuracy, great speed. These are the clear, advantage of a graph technology. That's exactly what we're building.
Understood, understood. And I got intrigued with graphs maybe 10, 15 years ago. And the issue that I was seeing when the NoSQL graph databases were coming out was that there was so much invested in relational technology, and the mentality of these banks, for example, is so wrapped up in tables and the whole relational approach. How do you get more people into the graph architecture and thinking along the lines that you're talking about?
Absolutely. Well, this is a wonderful question. Exactly. I think that's the mentality change is the most important. It's pretty much pivotal for everything else. Like you said, all the bank's IT department, they are so devoted to, tables, and they probably don't understand what graph is. And it's not enough explaining to them, okay, graph is high dimensional, your table is just two dimensional. That's not enough because it's not very intuitive. And they probably even, fear you, like, okay, I don't understand what's going to be like, in a high dimensional world. So there are a couple ways, practical ways to help the customer, to lead them, to gradually transitioning from two-dimensional tabular world, to high-dimensional graph world. Number one, because you need to have a comprehensive toolchain, right? By saying the toolchain, I mean not just providing them, okay, all right, this is our graph database. This is our manual. You can just go ahead with it. No, that's not enough. You're gonna have to. It's probably needed that you're gonna provide some kind of a consulting services to the customers. Helping them to initiate the graph data modeling. Like, all right, you have 10 tables here. Now I'm telling you this is the best practice to convert. Basically, kind of like ETL. Transform those tables into graphs. When the data is being ingested into or transformed into the graph, basically you are defining what are, entities or nodes and what are edges or, I mean, relationships and what are attributes, attaching or property fields, attaching to entities and relationships. So basically, this process can be white box, highly explainable. So the customer understand, oh, this is how you connect everything. And then you need to tell them what kind of queries or graph algorithm you can use to analyze the data to achieve the same kind of effects with SQL, but so much easier to digest. I mean, to in so that probably will lower the entry barrier for the customers, to be able to better understand what a graph is and get used to using graph in the future. Because once you are using graph, it can be very cost effective down the road. You don't really have to write thousands of lines of SQL code. You probably only need to write, dozens of lines of a GQL graph query, code. So, which can be, I mean, from that perspective, even the query language is very important. We do know that the GQL standard, international standard, will be published in 3 months. I think that's going to be in early April. That's going
Wow.
to be a major push. Yeah.
So how long? That's an ISO standard, is that correct?
Yeah, it is the ISO
Yeah,
standard. Yes.
and how long they've been working on that?
Trust me, many, many years. I guess since
And many
20,
years, yeah.
2018. But due to the
Oh my
pandemic,
God.
yeah, I mean, over the
Yeah.
past like 3.5 years, from 2020 to the end of to the beginning of 2023. So I think a lot of things were basically on pause, like no major progress. So
Yeah.
now I think they are gaining some tractions. So that's why they are releasing the official standard this year. That's a big
Yeah.
promise to the entire
Yeah.
industry.
Yeah, so I'm sort of envisioning with the performance advantages that you're offering that your customer, your potential customers have these huge data sets.
Right.
And I remember when I was in a consulting practice, our guys, for example, in cybersecurity, they would have, they'd be working with Titan back then, back in the day, and trying to scale up their graph database using those kinds of methods. How would you describe the user persona that what kind of person is doing this at a bank nowadays? What the person that you would be working with directly to use Ultipa?
Well, there are two types of person essentially using, either
Mm-hmm.
our graph database from a, system admin perspective. That will be the IT department, clearly, or DBA. But they just need some, basic training before they can start doing that. The second type of users are actually the end users, which are from the business
Yeah.
departments. Because I think we understand, well, let me, Alan, I forgot to mention this. Our vision, I mean, the vision of Altipa is trying to be the oracle of the graph era. Like we believe the era is coming and there will be a dominant or, I mean, a leading player. We want to be that leading player. But since that future hasn't come yet, let's look at the, over the past 40 years, let's look at the development progress of SQL. I mean, if you look at Oracle probably builds more applications, solutions than anyone else, way more than SQL Server or IBM DB2 or Sybase or whatever it is, Oracle has a large team. They even have I think it's a 100,000 strong team called OFSA, Oracle Financial Services Applications, headquartered in India. They got over 1,000, people. That's a lot. We run into Oracle all the time, like especially when you are working with banks. Trust me, that's a fact. Well, this can be very inspiring to us because graph is so new, and a lot of people don't really know what exactly graph is. So at the very beginning of it, we need to build a solution because we are the graph database wonders, and only we know our systems, know our toolkits so much better than anyone else. So why don't we just build something, by ourselves? For instance, let me give you a couple examples, like real-time decision making. Before Altipa, I think graph database has never been used for real-time whatsoever. We are talking, well, when I say real-time decision making, we're talking about real-time, for instance, fraud detection, meaning the fraud detection system is running online, accepting transactions coming into the system, and we'll be able to process it in real time. So we're talking about microseconds, like or 5 milliseconds. Within that 5 milliseconds, you probably need to go through many, many graph queries, and also the data is updated, ingested into the system in real time, which means the topology of the data set is changing. I mean, if you look at the other graph databases, they probably don't have such kind of capabilities because,
Right.
like many, many other graph systems were designed for batch processing, not really real time. Real time data processing is very challenging because we're talking about even the data, even the topology is updated in real time. So,
Yeah.
which means the data structure, the architecture is fundamentally designed to be able to, handle real-time data flow. And that's one thing. And the other thing is about, with that kind of architecture and data structure, then you also need to know how to build solutions on top of it. And let me give you another example, liquidity risk management. Because previously, I guess the only Oracle has that kind of a solution. That is a so sophisticated, complex solution, even using Oracle systems. And Oracle system has been out there for over 50 years. But it was very expensive using Oracle system to build a liquidity, especially for real-time liquidity risk management, considering that if you're trying to do real-time attribution analysis. Because you are trying to, if you are trying to understand for the business department to understand what exactly are contributing the most or the least, positively and negatively to the liquidity of the bank, that's a very challenging thing, and it's very difficult for Oracle to do it because it's just too slow. If you are trying to do the attribution analysis, the computational complexity is simply too high for SQL. For relational database, I guess we were able to build, a comprehensive liquidity risk management system using just Altipas graph system within 6 months, 3 to 6 months, with only a few guys. And I mean, in terms of the total cost of ownership, that's really a 70 to even 80% drop comparing with the Oracle, edition. And also Oracle has had a large team, building that kind of solution. They probably have 20 people. They built a whole system for 3 years. They were able to achieve something. And we had only like five or six guys. We built only like 3 to 6 months. That's a 90% reduction in terms of like the human resource investment. I mean, from that project or from that experience, what we learned that graph can be highly, highly, highly competitive in terms of the TCO, time to market, time to value, and even from ROI perspective. And that gave us really a lot of confidence. That's why we believe graph could be the future.
And just having seen some of these systems in action, I know you all have good visualization
Yes.
capabilities. And one of the problems you run into, obviously, with large data sets is the rat's nest problem. You've got a visualization of a graph. It's too complex. You have to get to a different altitude so you can make sense of it. And you have to zoom in and out. There's a lot of navigation that you have to do to get to the right place to see what you need to see. Can you tell us how that's done in Ultipa? How have you
Yes,
worked on that
absolutely.
problem?
Yes. Well, exactly. I forgot to mention that part. This is very important, actually. Well, visualization is pivotal for graph database to be consumed by average business department, because. And on the high level, assuming you have what not today we're talking about, data set in the range of over even billions of nodes and edges. that's clearly too much if we're trying to visualize everything, within one screen for all the data. That's impossible. So
Right.
for smaller data set, we probably can just visualize everything, and we can use WebGL to really accelerate it. But the upper limit by today's computing power probably is just up to like 1 million nodes and edges
Right.
within one screen. That's probably good enough.
Sure.
But there are a lot of algorithms helping us, to we don't really need to display everything, we only need to
Right.
sample certain data. So basically, to give you a sense, what the data set look like, the topology look like, but we are probably only displaying 10% or even 1% of the, all the data. Then as you zoom into a certain area, within that network or that topological network, you will be able to add more details. So until you zoom in all the way to the finest granularity, like then you can even look into the property fields of any specific nodes or edge. That's basically the the trick or the caveat for doing the visualization. Of course, there are a lot of smaller, startups. They are trying to, add value on top of graph databases. Like for instance, people working on add-ons for Neo4j and et cetera. Just they focus only on visualization. For Altipa, because we have a, the vi highly visualized front end, which is the Altipa Manager, essentially consider that's the graph DBMS. So essentially within that highly visualized, which is web-based, you can manage all the data, all the policies, all the users, all the access privileges, and also you can manipulate the data as much as you want. And normally when we are building end-to-end solutions, the solution, because the solution end-to-end mean it has a visualized front end, right? So the solution normally is a basically encapsulation of the manager. So just that, integrated with all the business logics. That's, what we do end-to-end solutions. If time allowed, I can even like potentially show you, one of our most advanced, I should say fancy systems. It's really eye candy kind of thing. Is that okay, Alan? I can show you that because I don't even need to explain it. You can basically get that, okay, all right, this is how much, visualized the system can, look like.
Yeah, I think that for this podcast, it's going to be audio only. So,
Oh, okay.
yeah, so we
No
won't be
problem.
able to go there this time, but it sounds really, really super. Just going back to the liquidity risk example, and it's striking, you mentioned the power, the regulators that have access to all this data, and they're trying to bring it all together in some ways and make sense of it from their perspective. So you've got the regulator side of things, and then you've got the compliance side of things on the liquidity front. And some of our readers won't be familiar with the notion of liquidity risk and the concerns that regulators have about a lack of liquidity, let's say. Can you explain that to our readers who aren't familiar?
Absolutely. It's going to, well, let me give you a quick example. Remember Silicon Valley Bank last year,
Yes, yeah.
That's a typical liquidity, burst. So, like startups, investors, like we got money with the Silicon Valley Bank. That was like 10 or 12 months ago, and when people started hearing the bank is having problems, then we all, we do what we do bank run. So the bank run means we're taking money, we're trying to taking money out of the bank. which means the liquidity of the bank. Liquidity, basically, I mean, the most important factor of liquidity is cash, right? I mean, deposits. And if we are taking money out of the bank, then the bank's liquidity will drop. I mean, the real liquidity of the bank is that, I mean, which is a financial indicator heavily regulated around the world. All the banks around the world are being regulated on that. And the regulators are looking at that, and the bank needs to look at that. And I think one of the, I should say, that's the single most important mistake Silicon Valley Bank management team, they had done is they forgot or they overlooked, looking into the liquidity indicators closely on daily basis, even on hourly basis. They didn't do it. Or if, or I should say they tried to do it, but it was out of control. So if they could have looking into that, attentively, like they need to monitor that, they need to try whatever they can do to make sure the liquidity indicator don't drop too much or maintain at a very comfortable level, the bank wouldn't be running into that kind of problems. Like on the other hand, all the good banks, they have very sound liquidity risk indicators. Taking the most important one is called the liquidity coverage ratios. Essentially, it's a mathematical problem. I mean, it's a mathematical formula. Basically, you have a numerator and denominator, and the numerator, which is the high quality liquid asset, particularly cash. But I mean, all the cash or cash equivalents, which is very complicated, and also divided by projected in the next 30 days, what's your total cash outflow? So that's the formula. The formula is very simple, but once you zoom into that formula, it's a very, very sophisticated. It basically involves all the transactions, just like all the assets and liabilities of the bank. For a large bank, which means every day there are billions of transactions, deposits, loans, and also dealing with the peers. I mean, the commercial banking, retail, corporate banking, commercial banking, everything. That's why even a simple, important liquidity indicators can be so complicated. And mapping that to the relational database era, that's so computationally expensive to do that and so slow. Oracle normally needs a T plus one to do that. That's probably why Silicon Valley Bank, I suspect, was still using very old-fashioned, relational database technology to do that, to monitor that. That's why it's so slow. There's a T plus one gap, right? Because Oracle is slow. But
Well,
you
there's a whole class of analytics that they're missing if they're not using graph in the first place.
In the first place.
So it's like they're looking for their keys under the lamppost because that's the only place the light is. And if they're using graph, they've got more ways of looking at potential problems and forecasting and trying to predict when there's going to be a problem.
Exactly. By using graph, we pretty much can do all of that in real time or near real time. I mean, which means the performance gain is like exponential. It's like thousands of times faster because from 4 hours to maybe just 2 seconds. So that's a 6,000 time gain,
Jeez. Well, that's a fascinating example. And I'm wondering if there are parallels in other use cases, other scenarios. For example, you mentioned cybersecurity. And the real-time aspect of being able to watch something in progress, a crime being committed, let's say, and really, because you have to watch these people in action to see what they're doing and what trouble they're getting into, and then if you've got that ability to monitor in real time, then you can really understand what they're doing to begin with in ways you couldn't before. Is that true?
Absolutely, correct, correct. That's exactly the meaning of God real-time decision making.
So you've got all these scenarios where people are doing, you may not know who the entity is behind the activity, the nefarious activity, but you can see when they're doing something that's a violation and take action to prevent it or to come after them for that in some real way. It's fascinating possibilities here. So what are you guys looking at over the next couple of years in terms of the evolution of your product and the kinds of things that you want to work with customers on?
Absolutely. I think on one hand, we are expanding globally. Not super, super quickly, because we understand, we need to be conscious, because we are not exactly sure, what the global, economy look like down the road. In the next couple of years, we need to be very conscious, gradually, not slowly. Our product is still evolving. We're still quickly developing the product, and to be able to satisfy, a larger customer base. On the other hand, as we are being very much prepared, that we understand, graph database can be the center for global, enterprise digital transformation. So we need to be ready for that, not from our, product perspective, but also from, the team's perspective. And we need to also, we understand, it's going to be impossible for just Altipad as a single team to be able to serve, customers around the world. So we are sending partners globally, everywhere, like from Americas, North and South America, and also Africa, EMEA, Middle East, APAC. That's truly global, because we do have people scattered around the world, and we're trying to be ready for that. We're trying to support every single customer and partner, greatly, gracefully, so that they are happy. Now they potentially will be able to bring in, more partners and more customers, so we can healthily, grow the company or the team, the ecosystem, which is very important for us.
And so are there particular applications that are emerging that you're developing and encouraging the use of?
Yes. Previously, like in the past couple of years, we have been working on, because we're a small startup, we're only capable maybe building 2 to 3 killer applications, at the same time. Now I think as we're having more resource, we're capable of, handling more. But we do see a major trend. For instance, supply chain. Supply chain is a major global trend. Like I think we're seeing that from pretty much like from India, from EMEA, from Brazil, Argentina. We're seeing partners and customers looking for supply chain solutions. So we are investing, resources into that direction. We understand, supply chain essentially is a network from data topology perspective, right? So graph database is perfectly, suited for that kind of scenario, for empowering that kind of a scenarios. And supply chain is one thing. Online real-time decision making is another, which is the hot, very hardcore scenario. Like you understand, this is like you're gonna need some kind of a capable computing engine, graph computing engine, to support that kind of scenarios. Because just like I mentioned, everything is being updated in real time, ideally, then processed, analyzed, the verdict to be generated in real time. That's our unique strength, and we will be able to continue to, to go into that direction. 'Cause I mean, that's going to be the future of many businesses. Previously, a lot of things being processed in T plus one or analytical processing, batch processing fashion. Now we are changing that. We're pushing that into real-time oriented operations.
And just going back to the supply chain example for a minute, it seems like that's another topical, compelling example because we've had these bottlenecks, say, with the chip supply and the automotive industry during COVID, and the fact that they just couldn't get enough of the chips that they needed to finish the cars, for example. And there were just diagnosing where the bottlenecks are and trying to work around them. That seems like a that could be a real-time kind of problem with a solution that comes from something like Ultipa.
Yes, correct.
And so just wondering what you're envisioning in terms of how users could do things differently in a in that kind of supply chain scenario.
Well, in that's yeah, well, Ella, I understand, your question. I think the solution from a graph database perspective or from the user's, perspective is we need to find out alternative routes, or mathematically speaking, or from graph theory's perspective, we need to find alternative shortest path. If one path is blocked or terminated, then we need to quickly figure out, along the supply chain network, what are the other options? Translated to human language, English is that, can we identify alternative raw materials, manufacturers, suppliers, that can give me the thing that I want, so that's basically, and that if that translated into graph query or graph algorithm, that can be very, very, very simple operations.
And it seems like governments are becoming more active. For example, the US with its CHIP Act in creating other sources of supply. And so there's a much greater awareness of the severity of the problem that we face with so few sources of supply and where the distances become a huge conundrum for us.
Correct. So all of these can be translated, or I should say, from a data modeling perspective, all the conundrums you just mentioned, basically we are converting or mapping all of those information, and onto a graph topology, or then basically you are all the problems we're talking about is just that, still trying to figure out, how can we identify the optimum solutions or the optimum path on the network, on the graph network. So I mean, that's especially interesting if you consider that, I think human beings are trying to solve real world problems in a graph thinking way. And so all we do is to build a graph database that's capable of helping people, helping human beings solving that kind of problems very easily. That's
And
exactly what
you mentioned the modeling capability, and I'm wondering what your take is on the kinds of simple schemas or because you're working with business users. Who may not be all that familiar with different modeling techniques. What do you find is the most what's the most beneficial way to introduce business users to graph modeling?
This is a very good question, Alan. What there are actually two schools in graph database, in I should say in property graph database. So that was a
Mm-hmm.
term invented by Neo4j, like 10 years ago.
Right,
But
right.
Neo4j, quite ironically, Neo4j is schema free. So that's the, Neo4j only supports label.
Yeah.
Label is a hackish way of doing things. It's a they don't really support schema. They use label to simulate schema, just like in the traditional database, in relational database. On the other hand, I think Tiger Graph is strictly, it's a very strictly schematic. Everything has to be schematized. Before the data is ingested into Tiger Graph, I mean the database, it has to be defined or attached with some kind of schema. Otherwise, you're not able to ingest any data. We understand when we were working with our customers, we understand, they have all kinds of needs. Some customers can be quite lazy upfront, like, oh, I don't want to define anything. I just want the data ingested. That is schema free. The other, like DBA or, system admin, they are pretty, proactive because they came from the schematic relational database background. They understand,
Yeah.
they need to define everything. So we come up with the idea. It's called a demi schema, which is a French word or Greek word. Demi schema means semi, right? It's a meaning you can be schematic on the one hand and you can be schema free on the other hand. So it's kind of like we are combining both. We are allowing things, to be defined either way, predefined or undefined. Either way, we can support that. And trust me, in real world applications, in really sophisticated business scenarios, there are a lot of sophisticated schemas, and schemas can help you really categorize, data, and so that you can better manage it later. So, and normally there are many, many, many schemas, node schemas, edge schemas, defined everywhere. So that's simply because the business scenarios or the business logics are complicated. You do need that kind of schema, even though you don't understand, you probably don't use it today. And in the future, it is possible to define or ingest more schemas on the fly. And we do allow that kind of flexibility in terms of how you manipulating schemas.
Yeah.
I should
Well, it's
say our product probably is the most flexible ones, resilient ones in terms of supporting that.
that sounds good. And I'm wondering, going back to the supply chain example, you
Yeah.
have lots of different supply contexts that are
Yes.
interrelated with one another. So you're developing schemas for each different context so you can put them together and you have a bigger picture of what the supply chain activity is going on, depending on which tier of supplier you're talking about, for example.
Right.
And so the quicker you're able to sort of model each context, the better you're able to just put together what you need to get more
Exactly.
visibility into the problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
This has been really super conversation. Are there things that we need to talk about that I didn't mention or didn't bring up? Any?
No, it was quite comprehensive, very interesting conversation. Yes.
Oh, well, yeah, it's been great to have you, Ricky. Thanks so much for joining us today. And, best of luck to you and Ultipa. Great product.
All right, Alan, thank you so much.